ain't heard about Moto Casino? Moto has real Vegas slots. Any game you can find on the floor in Vegas, you can play it on Moto. I like my slots hot. Moto's free to play, like food stamps. In line at the grocery store, at a funeral, in traffic. Keep your eyes on the road. Hop on Moto Casino. Moto Casino got jackpots that are bigger than my belly. Moto, America's hottest free-to-play social casino.
Download the Moto Casino app today. Moto Casino is a social casino. Void where prohibited. No purchase necessary. Visit Moto.us for more details.
Moto Casino. Social casino.
COTA has turned up the frequency. Buses are running more often across Central Ohio. Starting this September, you'll see expanded weekend service on the east and north sides, including Easton and Polaris corridors. Plus, there are added weekday trips downtown from New Albany, Canal Winchester, and Tuttle. It's more service, more connections, and more ways to move across the city. Discover the enhanced schedule at COTA.com/service changes. That's COTA.com/service changes.
In 2011, a young Arkansas girl escaped abuse at the hands of her stepmother and drug-abusing father. Back in the full-time care of her loving mother, she did begin to put the past behind her. She was really enjoying a happy childhood. But all that changed when a predator hiding in plain sight entered her world. This is a tragic story of a young life marred by abuse, cut brutally short. This is the murder of Jersey Bridgeman. I'm Emma Kenny. Welcome to Bang to Rights, the deep dive crime podcast, which takes you through some of the most heinous crimes the world has ever seen. Today's story is one that you've asked me to do, and it's one I've taken a while researching because I'm always aware that whilst children are my main priority and passion in life, and safeguarding of their rights, needs, and safety has been the biggest part of my career, it's also really difficult to hear about the horrendous things that happen to these babes. So I do try to intersperse my content these days, although with respect, I'm the kind of person that would just focus on these particular issues because I think they're so powerfully important to raise voices on. We shouldn't have children dying. Children shouldn't be murdered. And until our society can manage the blight that is child abuse and murder, then we have to keep talking about this. Just want to say before I start, thank you so much for all your support. Those of you who sub to me on Patreon and those of you who sub to me on YouTube membership, this is why I'm able to do it. You're massively appreciated. As ever, everybody who comes here, views me, likes my content, gives me a subscription, you're massively appreciated. You already know that though, don't you? Let's get on with today's case. You're going to be angry. I feel really angry thinking about the reprehensible human beings that somehow get to walk our earth. I also feel angry about what forms some of the individuals that are walking the earth. Let's talk about Jersey Bridgeman. She was born on the 14th of November 2006. She was born in Siloam Springs in Arkansas. What can I say about her as a little girl? Well, she was really healthy. She was a happy kindergarten student. She went to Sugar Creek Elementary in Bentonville, Arkansas. And when I read the words Sugar Creek, it just sounded so idyllic. It feels like such a terrible backdrop for a story like this when it sounds so much like a daydream. She had had a difficult life, so to speak. She'd had a difficult start. She'd had some really tough episodes, and she'd had what I would consider some truly diabolical treatment in her early years. So first of all, her parents had separated. Now she's young, and we appreciate that lots of us get separated. I had a two-year-old and a four-year-old when my own relationship broke down and I separated from their biological father. That doesn't mean your child is going to have dysfunction or ill treatment or problematic behavior. Moreover, it's just saying that there are certain variables that additionalize potential dysfunction, and this is one of them. So she'd gone through the breakup of her parents and her mother, Desiree Crouch. She was the individual who had primary care of Jersey. She also had primary care of her younger sister, Lee. Desiree, what can I say about her as a mum? Well, she was very loving. She was devoted as a mother. She was a really engaged mum. She was very embracing of her children and they were the centre of her universe. So really important to set that up because we're talking about the loss of one of her children today. And Desiree was doing everything that she could do as far as she was concerned in her power to protect her children, to love them, to bring them up in a way that they deserved. And because she was so devoted, that was the reason why Jersey was so happy and so healthy. Now, because of the breakdown in their relationship, she had shared custody, which is pretty much the nature of today, isn't it? When you have a breakdown in a relationship, the courts tend to agree that it's best for the child for 50-50 access. So her father, David Bridgman, he shared custody with her mother. So Jersey then split her time at her father's home in Rogers, Arkansas, with his wife Jana and their two young girls, who were 3 and 9 at the time. So ideally, this should be a great situation. Jersey should be thriving in the home of her natural father and a natural mother separately, but nonetheless enjoying the connection that she shares with both. But that doesn't happen. She really does end up having a, what I would say, far from idyllic childhood experience in her father's care. And there's a lot of reasons why. There were dependency issues. So David, her father, had really serious marijuana and meth problems. Now, I appreciate that lots of you will think that marijuana is perfectly safe, and I think we can all agree, for the most part, that's not going to be the main contender in problematic psychological and physical behaviour. It's going to be the meth habit. That's a very dangerous drug, and when you combine it, we're going to have some real problems. And it seems that this really affected the way that he treated Jersey. To say the word atrocious really does not do it justice. We're talking really high-level horrific abuse. And Jana, who's meant to be stepmom, although she comes across more like a wicked stepmother in this particular story, she does literally nothing to defend that little girl. So this child is spending this idyllic time with her mother, and then she's going to her father's and just encountering what can only be described as a nightmare. So we get to December 2011, and a friend of the Bridgmans is actually staying at their home, and they hear this voice, they hear a little girl crying. And because they're a normal, well-adjusted human, they actually go and investigate. They think, what's going on? Because the natural inclination of a well-adjusted human adult, even a child in fact, is to go and see if somebody is in distress. And so this person who's staying with the Bridgmans decides that they're going to go and investigate, and then they find Jersey. Bear in mind, she's five at this moment in time. And when they discover her, she's in a bedroom with a dog collar around her ankle. She's literally tethered to the dresser by a dog choke chain. It's around 2 feet long. But it's not even just this horrific, terrorizing, traumatic scene that this witness essentially comes across. It's a stench. So there's really awful, strong stench of urine in this small room. There's dirty clothes everywhere. And she had literally, and this is no word of a lie, been left to sleep in her own waste. She is five. The rage that bubbles within my belly is difficult to describe. I'm sure that many of you will mirror this. And what you automatically feel you wish to do to the individuals who felt it's acceptable to chain this child up. It's incomprehensible to me. Bear in mind, that chain was so short for this child that she was barely able to even move around. Now, fortunately, this particular guest who's staying has the common sense, the conscience, and the good nature to first off free the little girl, but also to straight away notify the authorities. And I think that that kind of behaviour is so commendable. It's very conflicting when you're in a situation like that, because often you look to the individuals that you know to reassure you that everything's all right. Now, the police arrive very quickly on the scene. Of course they do. There's a child being horrendously abused. So 26-year-old David and 29-year-old Jana, they're arrested on the spot. Now, of course, they're going to come up with a story, aren't they? Not a very good story, but nonetheless, they're going to try, because it's always about saving your own skin. It's never about accepting responsibility or, I don't know, being accountable, acknowledging the horror and the trauma that you've caused this child. So they instantly start making stuff up and say, basically, yes, okay, doesn't look great, She was chained to the dresser, but it was for her own good. Said literally nobody ever in the whole world. That's what they say. They expect the police to buy into this idea that this little girl, this child, this five-year-old, has been so problematic in this household that the way that they've managed her safety is to tether her with a dog choke chain to a dresser and also just leave her in her own waste. Because that's clearly for her own good, isn't it? So they come up with this idea that she's been sleepwalking and that she keeps getting into the medication. And then David claims that it culminated in one night where he'd found her outside and she didn't have shoes or a shirt on. So they were basically being moral, upstanding parents who were doing this for Jersey's own good. You can imagine the police officer listening to that whilst, you know, just playing with his handcuffs or her handcuffs, thinking, I don't know how long I'm gonna just humour these idiots before just putting these on very quickly, throwing them in the car, getting to the jail, and I don't know, leaving there to rot, potentially. But this is the story. It's all for her own good, the great parents. So they say they chose to chain her up because they couldn't afford a childgate. I know. I mean, it's just such an obvious choice for a parent, isn't it? Out of all the things that you may think of when you haven't got a childgate, like, oh, I don't know, sleeping in the same room as this apparent sleepwalking without clothes wandering child. Just, you know, pop something in front of the door, like your bed, have her in the room with you. Problem solved. But no, that's not going to play out because this is all BS, isn't it? It's got nothing to do with not being able to afford a child gate. It's got to do with them being horrendously abusive individuals. Now, bear in mind, as I've told you, David, he's unemployed at this time. So understandably, he's trying to say that money is tight. But let's be honest, he's got a serious drug issue. So arguably, there is money available for that. So the child gate issue isn't actually a problem, is it? It's just that he's choosing to apparently spend it elsewhere. So again, it just does not make sense. And we also have to understand that, of course, somebody with high dependency issues is not acting in a way that they would do if they were well. But it is absolutely inexcusable. It's as simple as that. Now, fortunately, Jersey's a bright little bun. And she's been living in this horrific way whilst at her father's. And she just tells the police honestly what happens. She says that the reason that she ended up getting chained up was because there was a punishment for taking a snack in the night without permission. Apparently, according to Jersey, she'd eaten some pies, some cereal and bread. And the reason that that breaks my heart is a child that is really hungry will go and do that. So this is a child who was clearly very hungry. She wasn't going to steal these items, she was being restricted without a doubt from eating. So she was going to bed really hungry and then she was creeping around trying to get something to eat and she just found pies, she found cereal, she found bread and she just wanted to eat that, get that in her because she would have been hungry. But of course, the consequence of that is she's made to be seen as deceptive and then she's punished for that deception, even though it's completely normal for a child to want to eat. And certainly if a child is hungry, they're going to do it if they think they're going to get into trouble at a time where they hopefully won't get caught. In this case, she allegedly did. So this is what they do. Because of a normal reaction of a child, they chain her up. And she also tells the officers that it isn't even where she sleeps where they found her, because she actually slept on the floor of her father and stepmother's bedroom. So even when she is essentially not being punished, she still doesn't even have a bed. But it also mirrors the fact that that situation they were trying to lie to the police about was absolute fabrication. She was in that room, tied and tethered because they were angry with her for eating. So David and Jana obviously get charged. They get charged with permitting the abuse of a minor. They get charged with endangering the welfare of a minor in the first degree and false imprisonment in the first degree. They are serious charges, and rightfully so. So the couple plead guilty to all the charges in June 2011. David actually is subsequently sentenced to 18 years in prison. So that's a hefty sentence. And Jana was also sentenced to 12 years and she got another 3 years on top of that because she'd violated the terms of an existing probation order. So it was taken super seriously. We're the first, aren't we, to judge the authorities when they don't do a good job of that, when they let killers walk the streets again, or they give these ludicrously lenient sentences where horrendous things have occurred. But in this case, it really does feel like the system took it to heart how Jersey had been treated and reflected the seriousness in the sentence. Now, Jersey at this point clearly has a mother who adores her. So she subsequently gets released into the full-time care.
Moro Casino. America's social casino.
Welcome to Moto Casino, where the excitement never ends. With thousands of the hottest free-to-play social casino games, fastest payouts, and the best promotions in the industry. No tricks or gimmicks. Owned and operated in the USA.
Moto Casino is a free-to-play social casino. No purchase necessary. 21 plus to play. Void where prohibited.
Sign up today for a generous welcome bonus.
Moto Casino. America's social casino.
Download the Moto Casino app today.
Of biological mother, Desiree. So now we have what I would consider a good scenario for Jersey. November 2012, she's living with her mother. She's living with her two-year-old sister, Lee. She's in a mobile home in a place called Bentonville, Arkansas. And it had taken a year with respect for Jersey to start recovering, you know, to really start to trust her environment, to find her security, to feel like her home is safe and her mum is keeping her. You can understand that, can't you? Because she'd had that horrible period of time where she'd been being treated horribly. And now all of a sudden she's in a position where her mum, the person who just dotes on her and genuinely places her at the centre of her world, is there full time. But for a kid who's been through all that, like, when is it going to change? What if things go wrong? And so Jersey had gone through that level of feeling, understandably, when you think about the issues that she would face because of that abuse, nothing to do with her mother, the healing that would be required would be huge. But fortunately, Desiree is one of those mums who was willing to put that work in and ensure that the harm that had been inflicted by her father and stepmother was something that she would overcome. And she did. She was really happy. She had the chance of what I would say is a good life, a loved life. She apparently absolutely loved being a big sister to Lee. She'd even got a new puppy, which she absolutely adored, apparently. So we're seeing this real character, aren't we, with Jersey? She's resilient, she's a fighter, but she's loving and compassionate. She adores her family, she loves animals. She's a lovely little girl. And she's thriving, she's really thriving. Now in March that year, the family had actually moved into their new home. So she'd celebrated her sixth birthday just a week before. She'd even had a party. And what's really tragic about that is the party that she had and the birthday that she had, it was going to be her last. Nobody knew that at that moment in time. Potentially one person knew it, if I'm really honest. But nonetheless, it's those moments that we mostly take for granted, right? You're with your child at their birthday party. They're loving life. They're thriving. They're happy. They're excited. You're dreaming about the future for them and everything it's going to hold. And everything is full of hope and potential. And you have no idea that that's the last time you'll ever really get to experience the candles on the cake and the party games with the friends and the presents that they didn't need, but they ended up loving opening on the day. All of those things we take for granted until they're no longer there. And for Jersey's mum, that will absolutely have been the case. She will have loved it and thrived throughout that birthday, but she will have imagined so many more. So Desiree, as I've said, totally loving mum, but she obviously wants to have people around her who support her. And she's really close friends with her next door neighbour. Her next door neighbour is called Amanda Holly. Now, Amanda, she lives with her husband, 28-year-old Zachary Dwayne Holly. They'd been married for like 8 months. They had actually been a couple with respect for 15 years. So they had a lot of history together. And they also had 2 children of their own. In fact, their 4-year-old son would often play with Jersey because they were relatively similar ages. What I would say about Holly, before I tell you a little bit more about who he is and his background, he had issues with his intelligence, I mean, to say the least. So he couldn't even spell his middle name, And I appreciate there are people out there with what we call skills for life issues in the UK. I've worked on many estates where 30% of the young people do not read and write even by secondary school age. So I am appreciating and aware of the fact that that does not mean you are not clever. But when it comes down to this particular man, it's like there was developmental issues. So he had a reading age of an 8-year-old, and wow, what a dysfunctional and abusive upbringing, genuinely. Like I said, no one will ever get a get out of jail free card with me. No one gets a pass for being a horrible human being, no matter how awful your background is. But if we're gonna think about behaviors, let's say taking sociopathic behavior, what the belief is that a sociopath is formed by the environment and society that they're brought up in, and so on and so forth. If we do not understand all of the ingredients list of that possibility paradigm, then we're not really going to be able to explore how to counter that with a better society, better expectations for parents, better treatment of kids, and so on and so forth. So he had had a really dysfunctional, abusive upbringing. His mum was a really heavy drug addict. She was in a relationship with an incredibly violent man. There'd actually been more than a dozen reports of Holly being abused as a child. So we're talking high level. Bear in mind, most people don't even get reported. When you've got more than a dozen reports of Holly being abused as a kid, that's because it's prolific. It likely is so obvious that people are reporting again and again and again because it's consistent. There are enough opportunities because it never stops. He also told authorities when he was being reported, because he was seen as an abused child, that he was being neglected. He talked about the fact he was physically and sexually abused by his older brother, by his mother, and by her partner. Ooh, where to start with the horror of that description? Genuinely, where to start? As a child, your safe place and safe space is meant to be with your primary caregivers. And yes, I know that most abusers are people that children know and often family members. I'm saying stereotypically what we should expect for a child is that there is a safe place and a safe space within their home. But when that safe place and safe space isn't available because an individual is abusing them, you would hope that there will be another person within their direct line of support who will be somebody that they can go to for support and care and for a consideration that is not neglectful or abandoning or abusive, but not for this kid. His older brother, his mother and her partner, they're all in on it. He's literally exploited in every way, shape and form that he could be exploited. And during his childhood, he lives in 9 different homes, and I kid you not when I say I think this is the highest score as far as transfers to schools go. So during his childhood, during the time that he's at those 9 different homes, he transfers schools 23 times. Red flag, red flag, red flag, red flag, red flag, genuinely. If a child is being moved that often, it's for an obvious reason. They don't like heat on them. So they don't want the kid being seen by people consistently, because injuries and a child speaking out is going to become more common to trusted peers and parties like teachers. So he's just moved constantly from pillar to post, highly disruptive, massively dysfunctional, impossibly challenging intellectually. And when you've already got developmental issues, it's going to screw you over 1,000 times. This kid is in the worst place possible. I will not deny that. He has had an awful childhood, a textbook terror childhood. Also known to the police, will say, when I've looked at his criminal record, it was for relatively minor offences, so there's no violent history. And at the end of the day, he has managed, in spite of all this, I suppose we could say, to hold down a long-term relationship with his partner, now wife, and to have children. So looking at it, on the face of it, to some degree, he's managed to leave the toxicity of his past. On the surface, like I said. Obviously, what we know is still waters run deep, dark, and unfortunately, despicably. And unfortunately, that case will reflect this. So Amanda, well, she's Desiree's best friend, isn't she? So at the end of the day, Desiree looks at her best mate, who she's really close to, and thinks, your choice is going to be a good choice. I don't need to question it. I've got an instant bias. If I trust my friend, I love my friend, I'm around my friend a lot, and I get on with them really well, and I think they're a good human being, and they've chosen a partner. Unless that partner is standing out for certain reasons that makes me question them, for example, if they're violent or if they come on to me in a lechy way, all these things that kind of give you an indication that things aren't quite right, you're going to think, well, they've made a good choice and I'm going to respect that choice. And I'm going to trust their partner because I trust my best friend. It's one of those biases that we all buy into. Listen, there's nothing wrong with us doing that either, just to put it out there. So many of us just automatically trust people when they're the partner of somebody that we love and care for because we respect them. Unfortunately, it also lowers our defenses, makes us way more likely to become a victim, because the truth is every single human being who meets another human being should do due diligence. It doesn't matter that they tell you they're a great person. It doesn't matter that they seem like a great person. If you have kids, it's always worth doing that due diligence, because it's incredible how these chameleons can be. We just have to think about some of the most prolific serial killers. People lived next door to them, they were friends with them, and nobody knew, because you just trust. Couldn't be in my apartment, couldn't be in my partnership, and so on and so forth. We are beautifully trusting creatures, but it bites us on the ass more often than not. Now, as Amanda and Desiree are really close friends, and because they live next door to each other, basically they help each other out. So Amanda and Holly, they frequently help with childcare. They babysit Jersey and her sister whilst she's actually at work. So when Desiree goes to work, they're available to help her. Desiree trusts Amanda implicitly. She trusted Holly implicitly. She believed that they were a fantastic couple that could take care of her kids. And again, there's another issue there. When we trust people and they offer to help us, and that help's going to save us money, which means we're going to be able to treat our kids even better, that is difficult to say no to. So I actually understand fully why Desiree thinks that probably she can thank her lucky stars that she's got not just a best mate she can trust, but a partner of that best mate who's really happy for them to take some strain to help her better herself and look after her children well. And that makes me really sad, because you can understand that Desiree's been a great mum throughout, and here she is continuing, in her opinion, to be the best mother possible, to place her children when they need to be placed with good, caring, trusted parties that she feels totally secure in. She trusted them to bathe her children, to feed them when she wasn't around. Both Amanda and Holly even had a key to her house. And Jersey and her little sister, they referred to Holly as Uncle Zach. As far as Desiree is concerned, she has the perfect position from which to bring her children up in. And it's a good place as far as she's concerned, because hey, it's Uncle Zach and it's her best mate. So at the end of the day, why wouldn't she be happy? So we arrive at the 19th of November, this is 2012, and Desiree, she finishes her shift at the Easy Mart. This is where she worked, and she finishes just after 11:30 p.m. Now, as usual, as had always been, Amanda and Holly have been babysitting for her. Desiree arrives home, she collects her kids from the house, and the girls have both actually fallen asleep on the couch. And I think any parent who's had children, you know that feeling when they've kind of been up watching TV and they start to nod off and you just let them snooze until mum or dad arrives. I mean, I've had that happen many times when my parents looked after my children. So that's exactly what occurs. So around midnight, Desiree and Holly, they carry the children back home. They put them in the bed that they share. And Desiree carries Lee and Holly carries Jersey. So again, we're in a situation, aren't we, where she completely trusts this man. He's carrying her children back to bed with her. You can't get more trusted than that. To allow a man into an intimate space within your world, to hold your children, to carry one of them to bed, it just speaks volumes about the relationship that she felt that she had with Holly. Now, it's later that night that Lee, like so many children, has a night terror. And so she comes around, she's obviously upset. Desiree, therefore, goes in, sees how she is, realizes that she's in a state of distress, and so she takes her to sleep in her room. And that's what great mums and dads do. You don't want your children in pain. You also don't want them disturbing your other child who's peacefully sleeping. So she takes her back with her. Now, before Desiree goes to bed, she actually leaves the side door unlocked. And this is because her boyfriend's coming over. Now, she frequently left it unlocked for him. This was not something that she thought was a problem. And it's so he can come in or Amanda can come in, because apparently they would do things like share medication, and she'd come in if she needed some medicine. And it meant that Amanda and Holly were also constantly free to come and go, get anything that they wanted, anything that they needed for the kids when they were babysitting the kids. So this was an arrangement that was known. That side door was left open very, very frequently, and there hadn't been any issues before as far as she was concerned. Now, I do appreciate that some people will hear that she left the side door open, and the fact that people could have gotten in as something that was an error of judgment, and I'm sure that she will absolutely hold on to that herself. She doesn't need to feel any more guilty about this horrific situation that I'm going to talk about. I think that in our lives, and I can own this myself, we all have biases for safety. She lived in an environment and an area that she believed was totally safe. She believed that she had friends that could come and go. She felt that there was a security even in leaving her side door open, and the consequences.
Moro Casino. America's social casino.
Welcome to Moto Casino, where the excitement never ends, with thousands of the hottest free-to-play social casino games, fastest payouts, and the best promotions in the industry. No tricks or gimmicks. Owned and operated in the USA. Moto Casino is a free-to-play social casino. No purchase necessary. 21 plus to play. Void where prohibited. Sign up today for a generous welcome bonus.
Moto Casino. America's social casino.
Download the Moto Casino app today.
And ramifications of that choice must lie heavy in her heart and in her head, because when she wakes up at 6:30 a.m. the next morning, she is literally faced with every single parent's complete nightmare. She gets up, goes and looks for her little girl, and Jersey isn't in her bed. So she looks around the house. Of course she does, she's frantic now. She can't find her anywhere. She then looks outside and she sees Amanda, and Amanda's just sat on the doorstep. So of course she says, is Jersey with you? Is Jersey at your place? And Amanda says, no. Now at this point, and I cannot begin to compute or comprehend or pretend to understand and relate to how this would feel, but suddenly it hits home that Desiree is not there, that she is gone. This is completely unlike her. And that moment, oh my God, that panic that sets in is immediate. So Desiree obviously wants to make sure that she's found as soon as possible, and she's panicking. Amanda and Holly are now helping her to search. Holly walks around the neighborhood, he can't find her. Desiree's crying and sobbing, she's desperate. She calls 911 at 6:43 a.m. when she reports her daughter missing. This is the mother who, within minutes of realizing her little girl is gone, acts. She isn't the kind of parent who thinks, well, maybe she's just wandered off. Maybe she's gone and found something to play with. She knows straight away, something dire, something terrible potentially has befallen my child. Please help me. Now, the police arrive quickly because this is a missing little girl. First of all, they search Desiree and Amanda's homes. They want to check that she isn't hiding anywhere. They also want to make sure that nothing's happened to her there, and they can't find her. But then an officer just catches sight, notices that there's a back door of a vacant house. It's just adjacent to Amanda's and Holly's, and it's open. So they're concerned, a bit perturbed by this. It's like, why is that open? And what could that symbolize? You know, it's happened close to where a child has disappeared. It could be the child has gone in there, pray God that they have, or it could be that somebody's taken that child there. When the police enter, it's horrific. It genuinely is. They find Jersey's naked body, face down, pajama bottoms wrapped around her neck in a wardrobe. They can tell without any further investigation that she has suffered some unbelievably heinous sexual trauma. So during the commission of her murder, there has been a brutal, brutal sexual assault. When the authorities actually remove her body from the property, they actually noticed that Holly was weeping, really weeping. The police are now dealing with a child homicide, a child murder, the worst thing the police ever have to encounter during their time as officers. So the first port of call is to do what they always do. They get a list of registered sex offenders, the known sex offenders in the area, because they hope that by speaking to them, they'll be able to identify a suspect. Also, as you all know, they start to focus in on the immediate family and friends, because more often than not, the perpetrator will absolutely be known to the victim. So they get to work very, very fast, and the FBI start assisting the investigation from the get-go. So this is about a dog with a bone. They are going to get the guy who did this no matter what. And you can tell by the very fire in the immediacy and the involvement of the FBI from the get-go in this investigation that they have every intention to bring this murderer to justice ASAP. Now, later on that day, because they're interviewing people who are close to this little girl, they end up interviewing Amanda and Holly, because it's really important that they start to figure out the timeline of events. And at that moment in time, they're talking to both of them because they could have been witnesses. They can therefore, as witnesses, assist the investigation. First of all, they know that those two had been pretty much two of the last people to actually see Jersey alive the night before. And when they talk to Amanda, her version of events basically just matches totally with those of Desiree's. Holly, well, he denies any involvement with Jersey's disappearance and absolutely denies any involvement with her death. He says that he had a bit of a restless night. So he said he'd woken in the middle of the night, about 3:35 a.m. in the early hours, and he'd walked to the local Easy Mart. He said the reason he'd done that is he bought medication for an upset tummy. Police said he was really cooperative. He was happy to speak to them. Didn't seem at the time to have anything to hide. And he even agreed to give swabs of his cheek for DNA tests. Again, that usually indicates something really positive, because you don't have to do that unless you were actually considered a suspect. And even then, there can be some big problems if you have a lawyer who's making it very difficult and so on and so forth. But he just goes straight ahead, gives him the swabs. He hands over his clothes that he'd worn the night before. So again, very cooperative. And then the police go and check out his alibi, essentially. They check the Easy Mart CCTV, and it does support what Holly told them. So they see him go in. They see him in his dressing gown, actually. Do you know what? I am also one of those people who have, on occasion, in the middle of the night, gone to a supermarket that's open 24/7 in my pyjamas. I actually think they've banned that in my local Tesco, which I think is a little bit discriminatory, particularly in the early hours of the morning. But that's what they do. They see this CCTV. It supports what he says. He goes in his dressing gown. He buys his medication. But you know what? The detectives, well, they're a little bit suspicious. They feel that it's almost just a little bit too convenient that this guy who needs an alibi seems to not just have an alibi, but seems to have one on camera, buying medication in the early hours. For them, it feels a little bit too nicely packaged, because of course, he wasn't with anyone else, and we certainly don't know the movements about what he's doing before or after, and it pricks their conscience, it really does. So the next day, detectives feel like they wanna interview him again, and they trace him. He's actually his brother's apartment in Bentonville. Now at this point, when he says, come down to the station, he actually says no. He says, I want an attorney I'm not going to do anything until those DNA results are back. So he's completely uncooperative at that point. However, it could well be at this moment in time, he's spoken to people and they're saying, just be very careful. Lawyer up, kid. These things can go badly wrong. I've told stories on this channel where people don't lawyer up and it's deeply regrettable because they're fitted up with huge crimes that they weren't even involved in. It happens. So it is possible that somebody does change the way that they operate with the police based on advice that other people give them. Of course, it's not going to be the case here, is it? But I'm just throwing it in there. At that moment in time, the police may have conceived that's a possibility. We get to the 23rd of November 2012. Now, this is weird. Holly contacts the police and he says to the detectives, look, I want to take a polygraph test. He says, I want to claim a name. I want my name cleared. And I also want you to find the person who's responsible for this. So this takes the police aback a bit because they're thinking, well, literally not long ago, you're saying you want nothing to do with us. You want to lawyer up and you're waiting for the DNA results. But now you're literally willing and volunteering for a polygraph test. And you're saying that you want to clear your name. I guess that for the police in that moment, whoever took the call and the detectives who decided to do the polygraph test, you're probably thinking, hey, maybe we've got this guy wrong. Because it's kind of unusual when somebody decides that they're going to come in and do this of their own volition. Maybe this guy's telling the truth. But it's never quite as simple as that, is it? It's never quite an innocent individual wishing to clear their name. There tends to be some kind of reasoning behind this kind of action. And it is that later it transpires that his wife, Amanda, best friend, remember, of Desiree, she's giving them an ultimatum. She says, you take that lie detector test. You clear your name or I am going to leave with our children. And at that moment in time, Amanda, props to you. Because if you got nothing to hide, you're not going to be afraid of taking a polygraph test. And I can tell you now, and I'm sure many of you feel the same way, if my husband had been taken into the police station and had been around at the scene of a crime that was terrible involving a child, and that he'd been questioned in a way that suggested there was some suspicion around him and his actions, I would be like, go and take the test. And he was like, no, I'd be like, yeah, go and take the test because you've got nothing to hide. And if he carried on saying no, I'd be packing his bags and throwing him out because you're going to go and take a test. You're going to help the police however you want to help the police, as long as it's going to mean bringing the kid home or finding the killer of the kid in this case. If you're not going to do that, then you're not going to have a space and a place in my life. And that's how she feels in that moment in time. Amanda gives him that ultimatum, clear your name or get out. So that's enough of a push. So he goes ahead. Because obviously, you're going to do that if you're innocent, aren't you? You're going to go and do it if you're innocent. But of course, 26th of November 2012, the results of the polygraph test comes back. And what does it discover? Deception. Of course it does. So this polygraph test shows that he's lying. It indicates that he'd been lying about not being involved in Jersey's death. And in fact, the very same day, the autopsy results concluded that the cause of death was ligature strangulation. So they found scratch marks on Jersey's neck. And the reason that's so distressing is because it means that she was desperately trying to fight for breath, to cling on to life, to struggle and claw at that ligature, just trying to free herself. Also, and very, very crucially, they had to do an intimate swab, which is horrific. We're talking about a little six-year-old girl. And this is what has to happen to her body afterwards because of this, whatever you want to call him. I imagine it's a swear word. I imagine they're very bad swear words that you would use. And I'm not going to do it in case I get some kind of warning for using the one that I would choose to use. But that intimate swab reveals that there's semen. And lo and behold, that's a DNA match for Holly. Ooh, who would have thunk it, right? Who would have thunk it? So they've now got Holly bang to rights. It's also DNA on Jersey's pajama top that matches him as well. So he is completely and utterly guilty without a shadow of a doubt. Couldn't have been anyone else. Evidence is clear. It's literally on the same day of Jersey's funeral. the same day that little girl is being laid to rest, she's being buried in Bentonville in a cemetery there, that the police actually turn up. Holly is in attendance. He's about to enter that church service when he's picked up by the police. Now, that speaks volumes to me because, one, it's so public. The police getting him there in that moment. I appreciate that part of it may have been that they knew that he'd be present. It's helpful to know where somebody is present. Secondly, there's a lot of people. Makes it easier, for example, to restrain someone because other people intervene. But it's more, isn't it? It's about the psychological reality of the police saying, this person did it. And the synergy of that little girl's life that's been ended as she's being taken to that place of rest with this murderer, this sexual violator, this predatory paedophile who is about to cross that threshold and attend that service of a life he stole, and they let him know, you are guilty. Everyone here is going to know, we know, and we're not going to let you have that moment in that church where you can pretend to be a caring, crying mourner. You are a liar and a murderer, and we'll treat you that way. So I'm really glad they came and did it at that moment. He had no right to be at that place. He's then taken to Bentonville Police Department, and it's during this interrogation that Holly's advised that his DNA had been found on Jersey. So he's banged to rights, like I said. No way he's going to get out of this. At the end of the day, it's absolutely case closed. And as he's told this, he just basically denies it. He says it's not possible. He maintains his innocence at this point. But it's impossible to carry on, isn't it? There are too many clear evidential keys to this case, all fitting the lock that is Holly. So in the end, he cracks and he confesses to killing Jersey. In fact, he gives a very detailed account of what he'd done. He even drew a picture indicating where he'd left her body. So they know he couldn't possibly have known some of the details, which evidences that they've got the right guy. So this is what Holly says to the police. He says that basically he'd woken up in the middle of the night in the early hours and just had a really upset stomach. So he gets out of bed, this point dressed only in a bathrobe, and he decides he's going to go and search for some Pepto-Bismol. It's at this point he says that he leaves his property and he goes next door because he wants to look in Amanda's house. He entered via the unlocked door, and according to Holly, just...
Moro Casino, America's social casino.
Welcome to Moto Casino, where the excitement never ends. With thousands of the hottest free-to-play social casino games, fastest payouts, and the best promotions in the industry. No tricks or gimmicks. Owned and operated in the USA.
Moto Casino is a free-to-play social casino. No purchase necessary. 21 plus to play. Void where prohibited.
Sign up today for a generous welcome bonus.
Moto Casino, America's social casino.
Download the Moto Casino app today.
Looks around, but then he notices the door to Desiree's room is open. He also notices that she's asleep. So he then goes into the children's bedroom and he actually wakes Jersey up. Now she at this point is really groggy, but you know how it is when children are really groggy and everything's just a little bit hazy. But this is, as far as she's concerned, uncle. And so why would she not be anything but okay seeing him? But she comes around in this groggy state and he says, come with me. So she obliges. He then carries her from the house. He takes her to the vacant property, which is two houses down. And it's here that he just absolutely subjects this gorgeous six-year-old little girl to the most horrific sexual assault. He takes the pajamas off and, in his words, he says he tried to stick it in. She's clearly in pain and hysterical. She's kicking and she's trying to stop him because she's a little warrior. She's a little fighter. She knows this isn't okay and she's not going to put up with it. She's in a different space with a mother who loves her and she's doing everything she can to prevent this horrific abuser harming her further. But because she's kicking, he decides to stop her kicking. He takes her pajama bottoms, puts them in a knot around her neck, and then he just twists her again and again and again until she stops struggling. So he willfully and purposefully snuffs out the life of this child. And she fights all the way till her last breath. He does that to this little girl that he spent so much time with, who considered him potentially a member of her own family, only to be destroyed by him in a horrible, vacant home in unfamiliar territory by a man that she had at least thought she could trust. The police immediately know that what he is telling them is true because he could not have known lots of information. They had withheld it from the public and he fills in the gaps. Holly basically provided them with the details that nobody else could have known. Now he says to the police, hey, it was a spur of the moment thing. You know, I didn't plan any of the events that took place. He said, I was just walking into the house looking for some medication. And I suppose we can say that we believe that, or we can say, we don't believe it. You're a horrible, heinous, predatory, paedophile murderer, and we're not going to believe anything you say because everything that you say comes from a place of malice. So, no, we don't feel that you didn't plan it. I feel like you slipped in through that side door like you probably had many times before with Desiree not being aware. I feel like predators like you manipulate situations so that children don't know what's happening to them properly and that you took advantage of your trusted position. That's what I believe. So do I believe that you weren't planning to do her harm? Absolutely not. I believe you fully intended to play out your sick, dark fantasies and you got caught for it, but not before you destroyed a little girl's life and threw a bomb into an already challenging childhood that this little girl had experienced and that her mother had experienced because of what had happened before. I can't compute how unlucky Desiree is to have found herself in this situation. And words are not enough to describe the horror that that little gorgeous girl had to go through in those final moments of a life that she deserved to live. Now, Jersey's father, David, obviously he was serving his sentence for Jersey's earlier abuse. Nonetheless, I mean, the horror that he would feel knowing that his child had befallen such a horrific fate, and also the powerlessness that you would feel knowing that some man had done this to your child. Okay, David was not a good dad, and his dependency had certainly blurred vision, and his treatment of Jersey was horrific, and he's paying a price for that. That doesn't mean that he didn't have deep feelings for her now that the dependency was not an issue. So he said that he felt such guilt because he felt that his daughter meant a great deal to him. He said that he came across like a bad person. He'd done some terrible things in the past and he acknowledged that he'd done that. But he said that more than anything, he would never, ever be able to forgive himself for what he did. And his biggest regret is that he never got the chance to ask Jersey for forgiveness. He never got the chance to tell her goodbye. But more than anything, he was not there to protect her. And I believe that he got what he deserved by going to prison for that length of time. I really do. But we are talking about a very different position here than what he did to that little girl that she did not deserve, compared to what this horrific Holly did in snuffing out her life in such a violent, sexually inappropriate and horrific way. I'm not defending David at all, by the way, but I'm saying that if he's been in prison and he's started to acknowledge his ways and his failures and his mistakes, to not get the chance to rectify that in the future, it's a pretty rough deal in spite of what he'd done. Now, despite the fact that Holly has DNA evidence, has confessed to the crime, is an individual who has filled in the gaps for the prosecutors and the police, meaning there is no way he is not guilty. Before we throw in a polygraph test that, I'll take a polygraph test, I'm totally innocent. Oh no, I've failed. At the end of the day, he pleads not guilty. That's right, not guilty. Yeah, Now, fortunately, what had happened is in the meantime, myself and the district attorney had come up with a new rule. And the new rule was that if a person suggests that they're not guilty, when all the evidence is stacked up to such a point that anybody with one brain cell could identify that that individual is guilty, that we don't need any kind of trial anymore. No, we just cart them off in like a child catcher prison type cart with somebody who looks like the child catcher from Chitty Chitty Bang Bang driving it to a place that no one knows and no one understands where it is. It just disappears somewhere with the individual, never to be seen again. What happens to them? Nobody knows. Obviously, that's again just some kind of fantasy in my head. I think it would be a very good thing to put into actuality. People like Holly do not deserve prison. And I like the idea of the child catcher, who's a terrifying embodiment of everything every child must be scared of as a child in childhood, that would be nice to just throw in for good measure. Is it just me? I doubt it is just me. Maybe we could give the child catcher some tasers and cattle prods, just, you know, for on the journey. But yeah, he goes not guilty. So in 2015, this means, rightfully so, he goes on trial for capital murder. Now, I don't know. In addition to the, what can we say, massive confession from him, the massive forensic evidence against him, the overwhelming gaps that he fills in, the evidence itself, anybody could have presented and got a guilty result, couldn't they? It's one of those trials that doesn't need to happen because the prosecution wouldn't even need to study. I would imagine that the main prosecutor just read the bullet points and was like, yeah, I'm literally going to take a holiday before this one because I am very busy and this is not going to require me to do anything but go, jury, have a look at that. Yeah, guilty. So anyway, it's completely overwhelming. We get to the 20th of May in 2015, and of course, they're like, totally guilty. Found guilty of capital murder, kidnapping, rape, and also residential burglary. So bang two rights, but gonna be thrown at you. And I mean that, and rightfully so, because this guy has cost the state a hell of a lot of money. He's had a defense that's had to come up with, I don't know, some kind of idea that he probably shouldn't have given evidence in the first place to the police or been interrogated in the way that he was because he's stupid. Genuinely, that's the kind of thing that the defense will try to push. At the end of the day, my client's just stupid, so he shouldn't be guilty. Well, I think you'll find, historically, it is actually completely okay to be both guilty and incredibly stupid. Bit triggered. Not gonna lie, you might be feeling that. A little bit on the triggered side. Don't like Holly. So we get to the 27th of May 2015, and he is sentenced to death by lethal injection. He's also given two life terms and 20 years for good measure. I do like how they do that in the States. It's like, you are a terrible person and we're gonna kill you because of it, but also we're gonna throw a few life terms at you. And you know, not even just that, we're gonna give you 20 years on top of that, because that's how heinous you are. We want you to know that even when you're dead, you're still serving a sentence in the prison that we've sentenced you to. So it's very much validating for those people who are victims of these crimes, for Jersey's family to know that firstly, this monster, this absolute malevolent beast will never walk the streets again. It is not going to give them a sense of ease and justice because they've lost their child. She has lost her baby, but it will at least let them know that he's not going to do this to anyone else. The cost is high enough and it won't bring her mother peace, but at least she will know that as she is sleeping in her bed, he will not be free. Holly did address Jersey's family in the court and he said, I cannot believe that I have to say this, but I'm going to tell you because he said it and I'm going to try my best to not do this in a sarcastic way. He said, I want to sincerely apologize for the pain I have caused, and I hope you find it in your heart to forgive me. Sorry, what's that? I want to sincerely apologize for the pain I've caused, and I hope you find it in your heart to forgive me. Sorry, did you scratch my car? Did you steal me sandwiches? Did you cut my hair really badly so that I have to walk around in a wig? Did you break my heart because you ended your relationship with me? Did you cheat on an exam that caused me to lose the job that I was going? Because you know what? That pathetic excuse for an apology is so minimal and minimizing of the reality of what he has done. It is, wow, profound. That's an individual who thinks you can go, oh, I'm really sorry, but you know, if you're a nice person, forgive me. So I would imagine that for Jersey's family, it goes like this. No, burn in hell, you bastard. And burn hot and slow and long for eternity. Because what he did to that little girl, it does not bear thinking about, let alone having to live with the legacy of that knowledge, just like Desiree has to do every single day. Just like her little sister will grow up not knowing her big sister who adored her because of this man's actions. So no, you don't get to sincerely apologize. The only kind of apologies in these scenarios that are noteworthy of any kind of acknowledgement are when people stand and talk about what grotesque humans they realize they are, when they talk about what they realize they've stolen, when they don't ask for forgiveness because they don't feel they deserve it. It's occasional, it happens. When you hear people in pieces, the realization, the recognition, the acknowledgement that they've lost their life, they deserve to lose their life, but they have also caused such enormous pain that it's almost the powerful experience of carrying that burden that changes them for the better, albeit that it's too late, but not for this man. This man does not know apology. This man does not know compassion. This man is a predatory paedophile who abuses and murders children. The Arkansas Supreme Court later did uphold Holly's death sentence because clearly they always go through the motions of trying to get it acquitted, trying to get it annulled, making sure that it gets changed into a life sentence. Now, the execution itself that had originally been scheduled for November 2015, but it was ultimately stayed. Not sure why. I would imagine the kind of murder that we're talking about, if anybody's going to meet the death penalty mark, that's surely going to be somebody who did what he did. Then we get to 2019. 34-year-old Holly at this point granted a hearing to appeal against his conviction. Of course he is. But remember, he's really sorry. Can you just forgive me? Well, you don't sound sorry when you're trying to get out. I don't sound sorry when you're trying to be given actually your life back after you've stolen a child's life. You've had more years. At 34, you've had 28 more years than you afforded that little gorgeous girl. So why do you get to appeal that? Mind-bendingly, mind-blowingly, blindsidingly, Amanda, Desiree's apparent best friend, fully supported the application. Go, Amanda. You go support a predatory paedophile. Go, Amanda. Support a massive murderer. Go on, Amanda. You feel sorry for this guy who stole the life of your best mate's child. You sound like a really great girl. Everybody would really like to be friends with you. So he argues that he received ineffective representation. He claims that the defense team didn't seek to exclude some evidence. Sorry, Amanda, are you actually supporting this guy? Yeah. Why? Because if they hadn't put the evidence in that showed that he was guilty, then he wouldn't have been found guilty. Amanda, excluding the evidence that shows he's guilty would be withholding evidence that showed he was guilty, which would mean he'd get off with a crime where he'd murdered a child and violated her sexually. Why would that not be entered?
I don't really know very much about anything. I just know that if it had been excluded, maybe he would have not been sent to prison.
Amanda, you need to be sent away, probably for several years, to have intense therapy and hopefully some reflection and recognition of firstly, what a horrible best friend you are, and secondly, what horrific choices you make in male partners and fathers of your children. Good job, Amanda. You failed the mate test. Sorry, went off a bit of a tangent. Can't understand how Amanda fully supports his application. Can't imagine that she would want that excuse for a human being within a million miles of her children. So anyway, this is what he says. Defense team didn't seek to exclude some evidence, and apparently they conducted an ineffective jury selection. What was that? What was it? Sorry, what's that? We've got an ineffective jury selection. Do you want to explain that for us? Okay. It's ineffective because what you've done is you've recruited normal, well-adjusted members of society who, when shown the overwhelming evidence, may find me guilty. What do you think jury selection should be about? Personally, I think I should get to choose my jury, and my wife, she's going to sort out who comes. Just throwing it out there. Is that possible? That's how we want to do it. And then it will be an effective jury selection. I swear to you, why did they humour these absolute fools? Don't understand it. They also said that they failed to present evidence related to his mental health issues. Oh, let's just go for that whammy. Oh yeah. I did this because I'm not well mentally. Kid. And I wish that this is how it went when people threw that in. Kid.
You ain't heard about Moto Casino?
Moto has real Vegas slots. Any game you can find on the floor in Vegas, you can play it on Moto.
I like my slots hot.
Moto's free to play, like food stamps.
In line at the grocery store, at a funeral, in traffic.
Keep your eyes on the road.
Hop on Moto Casino.
Moto Casino got jackpots that are bigger than my belly.
Moto, America's hottest free to play social casino.
Download the Moto Casino app today. Moto Casino is a social casino. Void where prohibited. No purchase necessary. Visit Moto.us for more details.
Moto Casino. America's social casino.
Right now, there is a major population in the States, the UK, other countries in the Western world who are all on antidepressants, right? Mental illness is incredibly common. Mental health issues are incredibly common. But you know what the difference is between somebody who's mentally ill and you? You're a murderer. It's not the same. Murderers can also have mental health issues. The problem is, they're still a murderer. Really drives me mad, guys. The amount of times I have to go through these cases and this research and see mental health lauded as a reasoning for doing things like sexually molesting children and killing them sends me to a place of distraction. Many of you will have mental illnesses. Many of you may well have mental health issues caused by people who abused you. What you don't need is absolute wrong-uns like this individual, using that to levy as an excuse for the behaviour that was so disgusting and despicable and grotesque and murderous that it should not be placed in the same sentence as mental health. Now, Holly's mother, bear in mind, Holly's mum, you know, just going to throw you back. Rewind a little bit, guys. Remember, Holly's mother, Ginger Simmons, the one who sexually molested him, yeah? She has, in spite of this, given interviews in the media. She sounds like a very, very nice person, doesn't she? So she brought this kid up in the most reprehensible, horrific of ways. Like I said, sociopathic behaviour often created because of the way that people are brought up. That's the belief. So she gives these interviews in the media. Now, she has been sober since 2003, and that definitely changes people's behaviour. She says, I still love my son. Do you? I mean, I'm not really sure your behaviour evidence that you ever loved him anyway. But okay, let's just humour you for a minute. So she has expressed not only that she loves her son, but she believes in the importance of forgiveness in this regard. And she is somebody that in my head immediately sounds massively narcissistic. You literally allowed your son to be horrifically abused in your care, and you abused him too. And your argument is, hey, I'm not an alcoholic anymore. Things have changed. Forgive me. And it's important to forgive him too. You know what? You need to be the one kid going around and asking for forgiveness from all of us. You need to be repairing the behaviours and acknowledging the behaviours and taking accountability and responsibility for the behaviours that you bestowed on that child. You know, you were a drug-addled, dysfunctional, abusive parent, and you helped to create a murdering paedophile. That's on you, as well as it is on him. So you know what, Ginger? We ain't in the forgiving mood when it comes down to people like you. So you carry on cracking on with your interviews, because for the most normal, well-adjusted 99.5% of the population, we see you for the absolute monster you were. And I'm all for forgiving people when they've had dependency issues. I'm all for helping those individuals who've had these issues. But you abused your kid. You don't get to say, oh, I just need some forgiveness. You get to say, I deserve everything I get. And maybe one day, when I'm judged very harshly, I'll be able to truly understand the impact that I had on the lives that I impacted and affected because of my heinous behaviour. Because of you and because of him, Jersey's dead. I hope that haunts you. I hope it haunts you minute by minute, moment by moment, for eternity. And I use the word eternity very specifically because, God damn it, I hope you face that pain for eternity. It's absolutely awful to think for me, because even though I haven't got evidence for this, I can't help going there. And I'm saying this from my perspective. I haven't evidence of this. I'm just talking about from my background in working in this area. I just want to acknowledge, whilst it's really awful to do so, that I do suspect that Holly was probably sexually abusing Jersey in the months prior to her killing. I appreciate that sometimes people act in these random acts of violence that seem very out of character for them, but I don't believe that. I think that Holly has proved himself to be a horrific, perpetual liar. I think that he knew exactly what he was doing, where he was going, what his intention was that night. I don't believe that it's normal in any way, shape or form when you look at the way that actions of criminals escalate to imagine that it would have gone from zero to murder in such a rapid way that evening. I don't believe that it goes from earlier minor offences, criminal-wise, that we know happened in his past, to this serious violent crime in such an escalation of moments, essentially. I don't feel that for a minute. I think that he was already abusing that little girl, and he was doing it in a way where she wouldn't have really understood what it is, because that's what happens. It's really confusing when somebody you like is abusing you, because you still like them and you aren't sexually aware, so you don't really know that something terrible is happening to you. It's something that kind of is a reflective exercise. You realise as time goes on, this is wrong. For me, and again, this is just me placing my own fears and thoughts on this. I don't have evidence for it, make that clear. But I believe that Holly is a predator who knew exactly how to groom both a mother and a child to place him in a position of trust. And then when potentially she got to a situation where she was becoming problematic, maybe she was going to say something, maybe she was starting to fight back because she was realising this wasn't nice, she didn't want this at all, then she becomes a problem for him. And at that point, with that impulse control that's clearly problematic for him, he decides to get what he wants and also, as far as he's concerned, snuff out a problem. Because bear in mind, these horrific predators, they don't see children as children. They see them as objects for their use. They are perpetrators of the highest level, and they don't have any consideration or care for what they're doing to those little bodies and babes that we're talking about. It's absolutely horrific to imagine that he had all those regular opportunities. He babysat Jersey. He had a key to Desiree's home. He could have abused this trust whenever he wished. because in hindsight, he was absolutely a dangerous child predator. He had motive, he had opportunity. And let's be honest, I'm going to acknowledge that Holly had suffered as a child horrific physical and sexual abuse as a child. And what I would say, and again, let me make this clear, 99% of individuals who were abused as children, they find child abuse so reprehensible that they will often spend their lives preventing others from being affected or being really, really clear about the way that they feel about these horrific predators. However, when we look at individuals who perpetuate abuse, who repeat this kind of offending behavior, they have, on the whole, been abused as children. So even though it's a tiny minority of people who are abused, still those who carry on abusing as they become elder tend to have had this in their histories. And again, it's one of those where most people find child abuse reprehensible. When they are kids, they find it violently offensive. It brings and evokes shame. They reject that whole feeling. They even reject their bodies at times because they're so disgusted by it. But there will be a tiny percentage who are not affected in that way. And Holly isn't affected in that way. In fact, he goes on to wish to carry out this kind of behavior on other children, albeit knowing how that had affected him. Again, there's a tiny bit, therefore, that we can say potentially explains some of his actions, but not in a billion years is it a justification. Because countless more people who suffer abuse are the exact opposite, as I said, of monsters like Holly. They cannot imagine subjecting anyone to abuse. They would lie down and die to protect another one from such abuse. Now, despite this gorgeous little girl's tragic life, which was tainted by horrific violence and abuse, you've got to also remember that there were people who knew her. So if you look at it in the black and white, this child's life was littered with such terrible dysfunction on the side of her father and then subsequently because of Holly. But the people who actually knew this little girl, they said that when Desiree had her and as she was growing and learning to thrive through her pain and getting over some of those awful incidences that she'd experienced, she was a really happy little girl. She was always smiling. And I want that to be known. That's all testament to her mother. It's testament to her mother, Desiree, and her family. Now, Desiree, who has gone through the most profound loss, and her partner, that's Brandon Crouch, they got married in 2014, and along with Lee, Jersey's younger sister, they now have a little girl, Elizabeth, which absolutely is not a replacement. Absolutely, it will never fill the hole that there is of Jersey's absence. But I'm glad that they've become something as a couple that have created something positive that allows Lee big sister role. She was once the little sister, but now she's the big sister. And I imagine that Jersey's influence on her will still be part of who she is as she grows. Holly, however, he's 37 now, remains on death row in Varna Supermax Prison, Arkansas. I like that name. Varna Supermax Prison, Arkansas. Sounds like the kind of place that really horrible people are all placed together. Can't imagine it's a very nice place to be, particularly for somebody who's a child molesting murderer. Don't go down well in those places, do they? Also, of course, still fighting to have his conviction and sentence vacated because he doesn't care about what he does. He doesn't care about what he did. He doesn't believe he did anything wrong. And Jersey to him is negligible. She's just something that he took, used, broke and threw aside. And that's why it's so important that stories like this are told. So we make damn sure that our voices are heard. So that when people like this appeal and fight to have their convictions and sentences vacated, not only do they fail to do so, they find that people like us make sure that their original sentence is absolutely instituted. Holly is one of those humans that I doubt many of us believe truly deserves breath.
That's it for Bang to Rights today. Join me for the next episode. See you then. Be safe.
Welcome to Moto Casino, where the excitement never ends. With thousands of the hottest free-to-play social casino games, fastest payouts, and the best promotions in the industry. No tricks or gimmicks. Owned and operated in the USA.
Moto Casino is a free-to-play social casino. No purchase necessary. 21 plus to play. Void where prohibited.
Sign up today for a generous welcome bonus.
Moto Casino. America's social casino.
Download the Moto Casino app today.
Coda has turned up the frequency. Buses are running more often across Central Ohio. Starting this September, you'll see expanded weekend service on the east and north sides, including the Easton and Polaris corridors. Plus, there are added weekday trips downtown from New Albany, Canal, Winchester, and Tuttle. It's more service, more connections, and more ways to move across the city. Discover the enhanced schedule at coda.com/service changes. That's coda.com/service changes.